Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Porky, it's time for yet another very, very cool edition of the Two Mics on the Record podcast.
Delighted to hear it.
I don't even know how many we've done, but we're going to keep doing them till the end of time. Because every so often, if you ever thought you were going to run out of an idea, or you're going to run out of a story, which I don't think we ever
would. No, we never have.
Something lands on your desk,
That's right.
Which makes it seem as though the heavens have opened and you've been granted some kind of amazing thing, right?
Okay.
Now, this happened to me the other day because one of our Twitter followers actually sent me a link to something called the Daily Drone. Now, I don't know whether
Daily
you know anything
Drone?
About the Daily Drone.
No, not me.
But it's underneath the sort of subheading is that there's a crusader, i.e. the guy who used to sit atop the masthead of the Daily Express, who I think still sits there.
Yeah, there is,
the crusader with the shield and the sword.
He's a guy who's gone out and fought the Crusades.
Well, that's why
he's called
crusader.
That's right. And he has, he has the white and red flag of St. George across his chest and all that kind of stuff.
That's
right.
Yeah. And except in this version of the crusader, he's also holding in his hand, not a sword, but a glass of wine,
which
is rather clever.
Yeah, okay.
The Daily Drone apparently is Lord Drone's mighty Fleet Street organ, celebrating the great days of the Daily Express and its rivals, right? And it's got several people named in here.
Yeah.
As people who contribute. And funnily enough, Bob McGowan, who we were talking about not that long ago, is mentioned. So he must presumably still contribute to it. But also, here's somebody else who contributes to it. And that is, of course, the man who has been mentioned many times by you, your former sort of compadre, your former housemate, your former trainee journalist, one Mr. Roger Taverner.
Roger Taverner,
Roger Taverner, who, of course, has tweeted recently about you.
Has he?
Yeah, he has. Remember, like a few weeks ago, he tweeted something. He tweeted that picture of Halle Berry inside the Daily Express building.
And it was the old Daily Express building.
And it was the old Daily Express building with you in the background.
That's right.
Him standing up with his mullet hair.
That's right.
And you sort of not paying any attention at all to Halle Berry because you're too busy trying to stitch up your colleagues.
No, Halle Berry had not even been in the James Bond film in those days.
No,
so
she was Miss World or something.
She was Miss America, wasn't she? Miss
something
US.
Like that. Anyway, imagine my delight and surprise to see that he obviously regularly writes for this thing and it's called Taverner's Tales.
Right.
And this particular tale involves you.
What?
Right? And he's written about you.
About me for?
He's written about you and him going off to the Costa del Sol on some kind of jolly, right?
Yeah.
Which under the guise of doing a news story. But it's fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant.
Really?
It says here.
Yeah, it must be made up.
This is how it starts. It says a spell in the cells, a naked woman, enough drink to sink a pedalo. Roger Taverner recalls an extraordinary Daily Express assignment on the Costa del Sol with then assistant news editor Mike Parry in a bid to find the Black Widow.
Right.
Right? Do you remember any of this?
Black Widow rings a bit of a bell,
Okay, well, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about, and you can give your version. Because, of course, well, we all know Roger Taverner.
Yeah.
He's from your school of journalism, so it's entirely possible that he's slightly elaborated some of this to make it sound better.
Yeah, Rog first came to prominence when, as a Press Association reporter, he went to talk to a very young Diana Spencer.
Oh, yes.
Who was tipped to be
Charles's wife.
Well, I mean, just tipped to be Charles's girlfriend in those days.
Okay.
And he talked to her when that famous picture was taken of her holding her child in her arms because she was a nursery
the sort
teacher.
Of diaphanous dress.
And the light shone through her dress and showed her legs and all that. But he claimed, and it's not been proven, he claimed that she said, she was in love with Prince Charles, right? And guess what?
Yeah.
The whole of the rest of Fleet Street were so nervous about this
yeah.
that they did use the story, but every one of them used it byline, Roger Taverner, the Press Association. Really? They wouldn't take on the responsibility themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it says here, this is how it starts. Parry sidles up to me in the Popinjay, the Popinjay, of course, being the pub they used to drink in, at the bottom of the building, and under his breath and through his beard whispers, "Do you want a foreign?" Now, that sounds entirely like something you would say, because in that in those days, a foreign meant a trip abroad.
Yeah, it was
which, of course, everybody wanted.
Used to reward reporters who were doing well by giving them a foreign. It meant they could fly in an aeroplane, spend a bit of money, get pissed up in Europe and all that. As long as they got the story and came home, all was well.
Yeah, indeed. Now, the complication to this particular story, it says, he says, "My mission is to investigate the current spate of bombings in the expat enclaves and Brit holiday destinations throughout Spain."
Yeah.
So it sounds like a very exciting tale.
Yeah.
He says, however, it unfortunately coincides with Parry, who has emerged as having grabbed an office freebie to Torremolinos.
Yeah, yeah, right? maybe.
He says probably no one else wanted it.
Yeah.
It was a budget flight as well. So he says, you got on this horrendous plane.
I don't go on budget flight. He must have gone on the budget flight.
No. He later discovers, he said, later apparently the arrangements are all cocked up and we must share a room in a 3-star hotel.
What?
So, I mean, that sounds like you. Because I remember when you booked the hotels for the rugby show that we did up in Rugby and up in Whitley Bay where they had the fucking hotel that didn't even have a bar in it.
Yeah, but I didn't share a room with anybody.
No, you didn't. No. But it was a horrible hotel, though, so you obviously got form there.
Yeah.
He then says, while we were in the air, Parry instructs me, and I've got a picture of you there, instructs me to concoct a tale, and this sounds just like you, right?
What?
About the Basque separatists.
This is libelous.
Right, vowing to spill British blood the length and breadth of the country, right? he says, don't worry. We've got an exclusive line, says Parry, right? The exclusive line. This is classic Mike Parry, right? The exclusive line. Yeah. The bomber-in-chief is a stunningly attractive and seductively mysterious Spanish woman known locally as the Black Widow. Right? Now, it's obviously,
a drink on the plane,
obviously very clear. that this woman doesn't fucking exist, right? Exactly. Parry urges me not to make any calls yet, as it might knock the story down. Which is another classic manoeuvre of yours. I can't call anybody on this.
Call anybody. They might say it's not true.
They might say it's not true.
Yeah.
He says instead, to stand it up, I must verbal an insider from the Spanish anti-terrorism squad and someone who maybe is a deep throat from the British consulate in Madrid who fed us this exclusive information.
Right.
He says, fire when you get off the plane, then we can get some refreshments. This sounds very much like you.
So,
I mean, do you remember?
So you mean I came across all this information on this budget flight to Spain?
Well, I think
I don't think there were budget flights to Spain in those days.
Well, there's always budget flights to Spain.
I'm not sure. Anyway,
I mean, you could always have got on something from Thompson or something like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, he says, don't worry, leave it to me. I'll sell it to the desk, right?
Right.
So apparently you go off somewhere, presumably to have a few more refreshments, right? And he says, when you come back, you say, it's all good news. It's going to be page one at a turn. It would have been a splash, but we haven't yet got a picture of the Black Widow.
Right, yeah. Well, couldn't they find one?
So, well...
The picture desk wasn't very fucking good. Mind you, the picture desk was run by the Duke, Dukanovic, who couldn't find a picture after 2 o'clock in the afternoon any day.
He couldn't find his own jacket, because he'd already left it in the pub. Anyway, so he says, right, we have to get a picture of this woman, right?
Yeah.
And in his piece, to be fair, Roger Taverner says, well, it's not fucking surprising we haven't got a picture, because she doesn't exist, right?
Well,
he says,
see, again, this is libelous.
Yes. We then pick up the hire car, he says, which is bright pink, completely topless Suzuki Jeep full of sand. Do you remember that?
No.
Are you sure you didn't have this car?
I've never driven a pink car in my life.
Yeah,
boy's made all this up.
He says, I put the windscreen washers on and they fire over the screen and all over me as I'm trying to drive the car. Right? He then goes on where apparently you decide that, he says, I think maybe Parry originally intended bringing someone else, like one of the secretaries. Maybe Lorraine, he says.
No.
Are you sure? You want to put it anyway, it turns up that it's wine time. It's about 3 p.m. He says he finds this woman in a bar who's originally from Luton, which is good, he says, because I lived there once and I'm a Hatters fan, so is she. We talk about football bombings and Black Widows. By now, we and the wine have convinced us that BW is a reality.
Right.
So Black Widow is a real thing. Right. After a while...
Well, the Black Widow is a real thing. If I'd come up with the line, somebody had obviously told me, somebody from intelligence, you know, the intelligence services.
I wonder if we could go back and find the cuttings. I bet we can. Can we give her a lift home? Yeah. After a while, the girl says she may as well shut up shop because there's no other customers. And, of course, she lives just around the corner and it's too dangerous for her to walk.
Yeah.
So on the way
home... Why is it too dangerous for her to walk? Well, where were we?
Well, you were somewhere...
Torremolinos. It wasn't exactly dangerous in those days.
Well, it might have been dangerous. And Black Widow was about. I mean, she really wanted to kill all the Brits, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that was was the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, could we give her a lift home? Mm. It's just around the corner and dangerous to walk. So, of course, she says, right.
Yeah.
And then he suggests that you then decide you want to drive the car, which might be a little bit unwise. He says, it reminds me of the time we'd watched Portsmouth versus Everton and got ejected by World Cup winner Alan Ball from the club VIP lounge for exceptional use of expletives.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Did you get thrown out?
Yeah, it was him, not me. His,
really?
His expletives, not mine, yeah.
And it says, on the way back, in separate cars, Parry took a slight detour at 80 miles an hour through a petrol station.
No, I didn't know. No, I have no recollection.
Now, look,
I don't drink and drive.
In
so.
Those days, yeah, it was a different world,
yeah,
all right?
Yeah.
We eventually arrive at a rundown high-rise in the back streets of a tawdry Torremolinos suburb. Parry is in the driver's seat, volunteers me to go and get the girls' bags. And I have a bad feeling about this.
Why were we getting the girls' bags?
Well, apparently she's worried about going home for some reason.
I think she had a boyfriend who was a nutter.
No, really?
I remember this now. I remember that bit of it.
Really?
She had a boyfriend who was a nutter,
he
yeah.
says, up five floors in a ramshackle lift that takes ages, we enter a small, messy flat. Its walls adorned with military memorabilia, flags and pennants and pictures of men on parade saluting. It turns out that the girl emerges from the bedroom, naked, starkers. I'm actually not surprised. This will get worse before it gets better. So, I mean, it's all kicking off.
So Tavner's up in the apartment with this lady who's now taking her clothes off,
yes.
and presumably he's inviting him into
a sexual
liaison, is she?
And then he says...
So this sounds like a honey trap to me.
It does, doesn't it? And it sounds like there's a lot of shouting, and some other bloke arrives who may or may not be her boyfriend.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a right old mess, this.
I remember some bloke arriving and actually wielding a knife.
No, really?
Mm.
Oh, hang on. Now there's a police officer involved as well.
Right.
And you seem to, it seems like you get arrested.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember
that. Does this
that.
Not ring any bells?
No, I never got arrested.
But this sounds like a great story.
The only place I got arrested was in Sardinia during the World Cup.
No, OK.
Yeah.
Anyway, it says we were separated and put in the cells. I'm assuming I'm going to be rogered at any moment by some huge, hairy prisoner, a Spaniard in my works, as John Lennon
almost said. I think that was hope over expectation for Rog.
After
what
seemed like a lifetime, the lock turns in the heavy door and I'm ushered out. They were going to breathalyse Parry. They didn't have any bags left after a run on tourist drunk drivers. Mm. We got a severe warning and we were freed. And he still goes on and on and on about it. But it's an amazing story.
No, it is an amazing story. It never happened.
It's a credible story.
Never
happened.
You
seem to remember bits of it, though.
I remember bits of it. And I do remember being out there. And but it wasn't... do you know what? I think what happened was... I think we got a freebie and we went out there, right? The sort of freebie that you might offer to a bloke and his girlfriend and all that.
Yeah.
And I said, that would be a waste, Rog. Come on, why don't we get out? We're big mates and we went out there. And then I think we decided, as we were on a freebie, we would, you know, work very hard to try and get a story while we were out there.
Yes.
And that's where all my, you know, inquiries would have started from, OK?
Yes.
I remember also, actually, on that trip, because we went up to Marbella to see what the state of the things were like, and almost every business in Marbella, and lots of the villas as well, have the word Servende on a board outside them.
And what does that mean?
For sale.
Okay. Because
the economy in that part of Spain had collapsed at the time. And
that was when all the Brits started to buy the places.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was, yeah. And I wrote this great piece, which went on page 8. Alan Frame was the features editor.
Yeah.
And I rang him up. And we were basically on a bit of a 4-day break or something like that. And I said, hey, Al, I said, great story out here. I said, Brits are flocking in to buy all this property. Mm. It's Servende. Spanish economy's collapsed. It was during the Thatcher era when the British economy picked up.
And everybody had a bit of money.
Yeah, everybody had a bit of money. But the Spanish economy was going south at an enormous rate, you know, because it was in the wake of... who was the king who got disposed? Not the king, Franco. It was
Franco,
in the wake of Franco and the revival of Spain. It had a bit of a boom, then it went south again. So I was very responsible. I filed a feature, got in the paper. I don't remember any of this nonsense that Tavner's filed.
Really?
The thing with Tavner is, in the end, of course, he had a failed journalistic career.
Yes.
And so, you know, he's trying to blame everybody else.
Well, now nobody knows where he is. I mean, you tweeted him back when he's pitched out that picture of what's-her-face?
Yeah.
Halle Berry. But he never responded. So.
Never responded. All we get from him now, and he's got a very few followers.
Yeah.
He's only got about 2,000 followers
on
Twitter.
Yeah, he worked between Australia and Britain.
Well, if you look at his profile, it says journalist, broadcaster, photographer, travel and tourism.
Yeah.
And he only seems to send pictures out now of places like Bali. But it's Bali one day, then Vietnam, then Australia, then New Zealand. And I get the feeling that he's probably sitting in a terraced house somewhere in Bristol, where he's from,
yeah.
and where he went back to work on the Western Daily News or Morning yeah. Press or something like that, didn't he?
I think he with Terry Manners went
with
down
Terry
there,
Manners,
I think.
That's right. Yeah,
I think he found himself again.
I get the impression he's just got thousands of images of, you know, Far East resorts and places and all that, and he just pushes them out.
Well,
because,
you think he's pretending?
Well, he never seems to send a picture of himself in these images.
No.
Standing outside Sydney Airport.
Well, I don't know
or anything
what he looks
like that. Well, his pen portrait for his Twitter account shows him when I knew him 35 years ago. Flossy, long blonde hair. Very attractive man, Rog. Always never had a problem. We went to Birmingham once to a football match, and we made an association with a pair of girls 10 minutes after we walked into our hotel, because he was a, you know, a babe magnet, for want of another word. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they're both married, actually, by the way. Yeah. And they're out there out for a night out, but they didn't get home until 4 o'clock
story.
In the morning.
It's a remarkable
story. I don't know what Roger's doing these days. And whenever I've tried to say we must get together and have a drink, if he was back in the UK by now, he'd have contacted me and we've had a drink.
Well, you would have thought so.
Quite a remarkable story.
But it is a remarkable story, and it involves the Foreign Office. He ends up. The story ends basically with, well, it doesn't actually say if the piece ever ran.
Yeah.
He just talks about being advised by the Foreign Office after a while that they've got information that terrorists are now targeting journalists who are portraying them in an unsympathetic light.
Yeah.
And it'd be a very good idea to get the hell out of Spain.
And we probably did.
And you probably did. And I think that's where the story ends.
Mm. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Right, so we're back. This is on the record. We are the two Mikes. I'm Mike Graham. You're Mike Parry.
Mm-hmm.
What have you got that you want to bring up?
Well, we always like to, get a kind of dirty vicar story, don't we? And,
always do.
Well, I mean, think they're funny, you know.
Reveal, I think, the last couple of episodes ago, that you do like a dirty vicar story. It's never been my thing, particularly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm more of a kind of... I like a good sex scandal, but I prefer it to involve a sort of sanctimonious politician.
Well,
or somebody like the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Well, most vicars and priests are sanctimonious.
Well, they are.
Because, they're saying, you know, follow the path of God, and I am the righteous, and the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. By the way, a story I highlighted in a TMTV bulletin last Sunday, should God be called she, not he?
Oh, yeah.
As Piers Morgan picked up on it this morning,
he
had Anne Widdecombe on,
okay.
And she said, well, hang on, the Bible says the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Yes.
So a father can only be male, a son can only be male looking up to his father,
yeah.
and the Holy Ghost has always been the image of a male person.
Well,
so,
do you believe in God then, do you?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I do believe.
And do you
I believe in an almighty.
An almighty?
Yeah, well, I believe in an almighty.
Well, you don't believe in the Holy Trinity then?
What's the Holy Trinity?
The Holy Trinity, as every good Catholic
father,
boy will
son,
tell
and the
you,
Holy Ghost.
Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Yeah, well, that was in Bye Bye American Pie.
What?
That was in Bye Bye American Pie.
Well, it was in a line in a song. Doesn't mean
you know, something like, we saw the most.
No, it's the three men I admired the most.
The Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost.
They took the last train to the
coast. To the coast, that's right.
The day the
music died. So he names three men, right? But anyway, look, that's...
Well, the Holy Ghost could be gender neutral.
Well... There was a woman there, and she was described as a religious...
zealot?
No, religious anthropologist, or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And Anne, what's her name?
Anne Widdecombe.
Just made mincemeat of her.
Yeah.
How ridiculous is all this? Why do you want her to be a woman anyway? You know?
Right.
And, the Virgin Mary was a woman, and they were a married couple. That's how they had
the
a child.
It's a bit like that ridiculous story about Bert and Ernie that was doing the rounds last week.
What was that?
Was whether some writer is describing whether Bert and Ernie were actually gay.
Who's Bert
and Ernie from Sesame Street? You know, the two puppets?
No, never
You've
saw
never
it.
Seen Sesame Street?
Never saw Sesame Street.
Well, you know the Muppets, right?
Yeah, I know the Muppets,
Well, you know the two old guys?
Yeah.
Stadler
Who used to sit in the box at
Waldorf
the theatre.
Waldorf and Stadler. Some people think that we are the Waldorf and Stadler of the modern world.
That.
But anyway. There were two guys who were in Sesame Street, and because they, like Morecambe and Wise, you know, they got to bed together.
Yes.
There's people are going, well, they're obviously a gay couple.
Oh, really?
But it's all a bit mad, isn't it?
I don't get that. Anyway, the latest priest story, right? So an English Catholic priest convicted of molesting a woman on an underground train in Rome and then kicking and punching two police officers who tried to arrest him for this dreadful sexual assault.
Who's this?
Well, it's a guy called Father Peter Slocum.
Blimey, yeah.
A parish priest.
Slocum, that was the woman from Are You Being Served? Yeah, Mrs. Slocum.
Mrs. Slocum.
Have you seen my pussy?
Have you seen my pussy? Mrs. Slocum and my blue rinse hair.
That's,
you know,
right.
Ooh, I'm telling you.
Yeah, are you free?
Are you free? She's dead, of course, so the actress
who played
her. Oh, thanks.
That's lowered the tone.
Anyway, Father Peter Slocum, 72. Yeah. Now, get this. He's not exactly a high flyer. A parish priest from Gloucestershire has been sentenced to house arrest at a Vatican training college in Rome for 2 years and 8 months after a fast-track hearing in a closed court the day after his arrest. He'll also have to pay each of the officers who he smashed in the face and knocked their teeth out.
What sort of a maniac is this guy? Yeah,
exactly.
What the hell is going on? How old is he?
He's a fucking priest, right? And he goes around filling up women's bottoms on underground trains.
Right.
And then when he's asked by a Roman policeman to stop doing that, punches him in the face and knocks her teeth out.
It's a shocking statement. Yeah. Fair, is that?
So he's also got to pay each of the police officers €5,000. Now, point is, where would an English parish priest from Gloucestershire get €10,000?
Well, he might have to rob the old collection plate.
Rob the collection plate. And what's more, he's now, like, as good as imprisoned in the Vatican months.
Right.
And those two cops could retire on €5,000 in Rome.
No.
Oh, of course.
You must be joking.
It's not a lot of money.
Rome is not cheap.
It's a lot of money.
Rome is not cheap. Rome is like London.
Well,
when was the last time you were in Rome? Did you fall down the hill there?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I fell down the cliff into the Olympic Stadium
into
in Rome,
Olympic
where
stadium,
Manchester United were
playing the Champions League final. Yeah, but I mean, if you go and try and book a hotel, because I was going to go to Rome for the weekend, funnily enough, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Not a few weeks ago, last year sometime.
Yeah.
We looked at it, and it was actually really, hotels are really expensive.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's a bit like going to Paris, you know.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you say so, but I mean, that'll be the Dolce Vita set. But I'm talking about working policemen here.
Yeah.
Now, old Father Slocum, the man who punches Rome.
Where does it say where his parish is?
Just has Gloucestershire, but I'll get to that in a minute, right? Yes, sorry. His parish is... He was ordained in 1978 and has been priest in Winchcombe, which I know,
Winchcombe,
I think I know Winchcombe.
In Gloucestershire.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
For more than a decade. Mm. But he's also the parish priest at St Joseph's in Tewkesbury and has been since 2013.
Blimey.
He's also the chaplain of the University of Gloucester. So, I mean,
he's
not setting a very good example to the students, is he?
But also, it's not the kind of thing you just do, is it? I mean, you don't suddenly have a life of complete and utter, you know, piety and also adherence to the law.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you go to Rome and go, I know, I'll start touching up a load of women and punching some coppers.
That's right.
I mean, has he had some kind of fucking conversion to Satanism?
I don't know. But when
he suddenly started following the Dark Lord.
When the diocese bishop was asked about this incident, he simply said, I know of no incident similar to this before having happened to one of my parish priests.
Well, I'm not surprised. It's not really something you'd expect, is it?
But anyway, look, so when he got into this, like, this court, so what happened was, the Roman authorities very kindly said as long as the Vatican deal with it, they won't prosecute him, right? But they'll have to deal with it themselves.
So that's interesting. So was it happening sort of in Vatican City then?
No, it was on the underground.
Right.
It wasn't even in the Vatican City.
So I had no idea that you could kind of hand over criminals, as it were, to the church.
Well, you can, apparently, in Rome, because the Vatican City is a state in its own right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they could have said, you know, on the grounds of diplomatic immunity, he's one of ours, he's a member of the Catholic Church, we want him in the Vatican.
Right.
And it's like Russia asking for their people back.
That shouldn't be allowed, should
it? Well, anyway, old Father Slocum, right, who, remember, is 72, so no spring chicken, he denied sexual violence and resisting arrest and injuring police officers.
He must have been bladderated,
surely. Well, I don't know. A Rome policeman told inquirers that Slocum, who was on holiday in Italy, had undoubtedly repeatedly touched a woman on her bottom on the train on Monday.
Really?
Yeah.
So just one woman. I'm not saying that makes it any better.
Well, exactly.
Sort of done it repeatedly.
She followed him off the train when he got off at Termini Station.
Right.
And she called two officers for assistance. This is a Rome woman, so she speaks Italian like the officers do.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know whether Father Slocum speaks Italian.
Yeah.
So she said the officers came over. He immediately turned round. He first kicked the officers, then punched them in the face. When they tried to stop him, he stamped on them, punched them again.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Slocum's lawyer said in his defence he is shocked because he did nothing and he will appeal.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, you can't appeal against beating up policemen if that's what you've been doing.
I mean, I probably, it's not like this country where they've got CCTV, but it seems they can't both be telling the truth, can they?
Yeah, this is his line of defence. Yes, Father Slocum has assured me, this is his solicitor, that the train was very crowded and he did nothing at all. He can prove this because at all times he had his hands in his pockets because he is always frightened in Rome of having his pockets picked.
Oh, really?
Really? Yeah. I mean, what do people do when they have hands in their pockets all the time? I mean,
well,
you know.
And that doesn't sound good to me.
No, no.
It sounds like a lot of shite as well, because basically there was a guy done recently here on the Underground, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Who claimed he'd fallen asleep.
Yeah, that's right.
On the tube.
And was molesting a woman at the same time.
And somehow, while he was asleep, his hands sort of wandered towards a woman who claimed that he was molesting
her. But you sometimes wonder,
what
don't you?
What is wrong with these people?
I don't know. You sometimes wonder whether people take to the cloth, you know what I mean? And it, apparently he was shouting all the time, I am a man of the cloth. And, but as the officers were trying to arrest him, that's what was making the accusation.
Was he not wearing the old dog collar?
No, he was in... He's
in mufti.
He was in plain clothes.
They're mufti, they call
But he
that.
Kept shouting, I am a man of the cloth, I am a man of the cloth. And, of course, they didn't speak English, the coppers, so they thought he was just ranting and raving and was a nutter.
Yeah.
But
he sounds like he might be.
You know, you will sometimes wonder, you know, these people are supposed to set an example, and they not often do.
No.
Now, I want to tell you about another story that's come to my attention, which I think is ridiculous, Now, a woman who's 45 years of age, mother of three, has become the fastest cyclist in history by travelling at more than 180 miles an hour.
What?
On a push bike.
On a push bike? Mm. Or is she going down a vertical slope?
No. No, this is why I think it's a ridiculous story. Why would any woman, right... I'm trying to find out what nationality she in. I think she's American. Because she runs a home security company in California.
Yes.
Her name is Denise Mueller-Koronek, former junior cycling champion, who stepped back from the sport to become the chief executive of a home security company in California. But she decided she wanted to break the world record for going on a bike.
Yeah, but where?
I'm going to tell you. She did it in Bonneville Salt Flats,
okay,
which I think is where Donald, what's his name?
Campbell
got his world land speed record, not the one on the lake, which was in the Lake District in this country, Coniston Water.
But certainly the salt flats are where they do test an awful lot of cars as well, don't they?
Right.
And they do a lot of record sort of attempts and things.
That's right. Yeah. She hit 183.9 miles an hour on a bike, right?
Yeah.
Which is 40 miles an hour faster than any woman's ever done it before. A record set in 2016.
But how can you get a bike to go that fast?
Well, I'm just going to show you something now, which you won't believe. This is why I can't actually believe she bothered doing it. To do this, you have to cycle in a vacuum.
Right.
So what you're doing is you're cycling behind an enormous dragster car.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm showing you for the tape, I'm showing Mr. Graham a picture of the dragster car, which on its back has a tunnel built on the back, into which she rides and then is sucked along almost by the vacuum caused by the car going 183 miles an hour.
How can you possibly move your feet and your legs fast enough to keep up with that?
It's unbelievable.
She must be being towed, surely.
No, she wasn't. Because, you know, slipstream?
Yeah.
Slipstream is all about completely nullifying wind resistance to you going across the earth. Okay,
no, I get that. Yeah. But usually,
when you hear about
when you hear about people slipstreaming, they're behind another vehicle, right?
Yeah.
But they are still propelling themselves with their own steam.
Right. Well, right? Here you go.
They've got if you're slipstreaming in Formula One, you're still driving a car with an engine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
She still has to get the speed up, presumably.
Well, what it says here is for the first two miles. For the first 2 miles, she was towed behind the pace-setting vehicle, which was also used to help set the previous record in 1995.
Right.
Right? Now
so
then,
she was being towed.
With the racing car and bike both moving at 150 miles an hour, Ms. Mueller-Koronek then released her cable tether and pedalled the last 3 miles in the slipstream of the dragster, but under her own power, got the speed up to 183.9 miles an hour.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That is bonkers.
Yeah.
How the fucking hell is that possible?
I don't know. I mean,
you have to have some gear ratio, wouldn't you? Because you know when you have the wheels going around really, really fast.
Well, I mean, surely your legs would have come off, wouldn't they? You know what I mean? Or broken her fucking knees or something.
Well, I mean, imagine, you know when you're kind of, when you're a kid on a bike, even if it's got 10 gears or something, right?
That's right,
If you're going down a hill really fast, right, and you try and put the gear on and you try and pedal, your legs go around like something out of a cartoon.
Exactly.
You know, like the Roadrunner.
Exactly.
And that's what she must have looked like.
Anyway, I don't bloody understand.
Well, do you know, have you ever seen those guys that do vertical skiing? Not vertical.
Down glaciers.
It's downhill skiing, right? But what they do, instead of coming
side
down...
Side of mountains type
But instead of coming down and sort of going around and taking different curved routes, they literally go straight down the mountain.
Right.
Do you know how they train?
No.
They nail their skis to the roof of a racing car, right? And they stand with their feet...
They nail what?
They nail the skis to the roof of a racing car. This is how they practice, to like a Porsche or something.
Right, okay.
Porsche 911.
Yeah.
They then get on the roof of the car... And they basically stand while the guy drives the car at 100, 200 miles an hour because it helps their balance. This is how they practice.
Yeah.
Right?
Sounds absolutely mad to
me. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. And if they ever come off, when they're coming straight down a mountain, if they ever crash and come off the skis, some of them just die because they're going so quickly that the ski suit just burns off them.
Ski suit burns off them?
Yeah.
Good God.
That's shocking.
Yeah, I know. Now, also, I've been reading reports, right, which have distressed me terribly.
Really? Was it about more money being taken away from
them? No. Young people these days who are drinking less and less, okay?
Well, that might be healthier for them.
And it's middle-aged drinkers who are now causing all the problems.
Yes.
So
I've heard about this.
Of course, we are both totally against... the idea of drink driving and all that.
Of course.
But the biggest increase in drink drivers is men and women between the age of 50 and 60.
Yeah, but that's because they're not acclimatised to the new fashion.
Yeah, that's right.
The new belief system, right? Which we are, because we have to be.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that anymore.
And whereas people between 18 and 24, numbers dropping all the time, okay?
Right.
To make middle-aged drinkers think twice about their alcohol intake, don't tell them that booze will kill them. Tell them it'll make them look silly.
Yeah.
Because middle-aged drinkers, apparently, are now mocked on a regular basis by the 18 to 24-year-olds.
Oh, is that right?
So, for instance...
Well, don't worry, we mock them plenty
as well. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Excuse me. So, for instance, if you and I were, you know, sort of falling around in a bar somewhere, the 18 to 24s in the corner sipping their mineral water...
Yeah.
Would then deliberately try to...
Well, their Fever Tree tonic.
Yeah, their Fever Tree tonic. Deliberately tried to... Very successful company, by the way, Fever Tree.
Yeah.
Would then deliberately try to sort of expose us to ridicule because they think they have a social conscience to make us aware of our behaviour.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, they fucking try that with me,
right?
And there would be consequences.
Really? What sort of consequences do you mean?
Well, the consequence would be, I'd say, why don't you fuck off, youngster, and go and get a life and make a life for yourself.
Yeah.
And when you've achieved half of what I've achieved in life and had a few drinks along the way to try and ease the pressure, to try and ease the strain, to try and... You know, provide initiatives to give me the spark to get up every day, go out and conquer the world, like you will never fucking do.
By this time, you've already bored them to death.
Yeah, like you will never do because you ain't got it about you, and I have.
Yes.
Then you can come and tell me how to behave in a pub, okay?
I had a row in a wine bar last night. Right?
Really?
I was in a place called Gordon's. You remember Gordon's? It's a pub down by.
You put out a picture of an old haunt I've revisited. Which one is it?
It's a place called Gordon's. You know where the Embankment Station is? You come out the Embankment Station.
Has it got like circular windows?
No, it's
in
got no windows. It's down below. It's in a basement.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the building above's got circular windows. Yeah, I know exactly where you are.
It's as you know, if you're walking up to Charing Cross.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
It's on the right-hand side of the first pub.
Sure.
And I've been going there for... I haven't been there for many a year, but I went there for the first time last night, right?
Yeah.
And funnily enough, it was full of Americans. It's become a really tourist trap. So I'm not sure I'm going to go back because it wasn't that much fun.
Yes.
Although I was able to tell a story about your sister to these guys from Dallas because I had them sitting on a
table.
Dallas, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were... And I said...
So what were you in there for in the first place?
I was meeting a friend of mine.
Right. Okay.
Right. So the fact was that, you know, these people were all from Dallas and they turned to us and said at one point, oh, would you mind taking a picture?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, where are you all from?
Yeah.
Y'all. Oh, we're from Dallas.
Mm.
And I said, oh, I love Dallas. And they started telling the stories about my Mark Thatcher. They never seem to have heard of him.
But I said, don't surprise me. He didn't exactly put his mark on life, did he?
But he was married, but he was married to a woman who was the daughter of a very, very big named car dealer.
He was a second-hand car salesman in Texas.
And I told him about the mansion in Turtle Creek and all that. And then I said, you know, first
time I saw... Turtle Creek?
They knew the mansion in Turtle Creek. And then I said, you know, the first time I went there, I driving into the city, I saw the skyline, and I just started singing. And then I said, in fact, a friend of mine, who I work very closely with, I said, you know, the show had such sort of resonance over here. I said, he's got a sister who drinks quite a lot. And I said, her nickname's Sue Ellen. And I fell about laughing.
Really, yeah. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
It was very funny.
That was great.
But anyway, so I was standing at the bar waiting to get a drink. And it was quite busy. And you know how sometimes you're in a touristy type place and then not everybody knows exactly what the form is, right? Anyway, but I was behind. I was one back from the... So the next guy was getting his drink. I'm like, I'm in next. This fucking guy comes from my left. A sort of a Billy Big Bollocks
and
guy.
And pushes in.
From the city, right? And he says to his mate, he said, yeah, they don't know these Americans. They're all queuing up outside. They don't know how we do it in this country. This is how you do it in this country.
Yeah.
And he kind of hurls a sort of 20 at the guy who's serving the other guy.
Yes.
And says, oh, can you get me, you know, two glasses of white wine? And I said, oi, what are you doing?
Yeah.
He said, oh, sorry, mate, I'm just getting served. I said, no, you're not fucking just getting served. Yeah. I said, I've been standing here for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You fucking wait for me.
Right.
He's like, what's wrong with you?
How big was this fella?
What's up with you? He's bigger than I was, and he was younger than I was.
Oh, younger,
But he's like, you know, what are you getting so angry about? I said, because I'm standing here.
Yeah.
I said, it's nothing to do with...
And you're not getting served before me.
I said, if you did what you just did in a pub, you know what would happen. You get smashed face.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it didn't... No, he was quite good about it.
Yeah.
But by this time, but he obviously said, well, I come here all the time. And the guy was giving him the drink.
Right.
And I said, well, don't fucking do that again.
Yeah.
You know, but it's absolutely outrageous.
No, I totally agree with you. I come here all the time. It's my pub. What are you doing in here, stranger?
I said, I've been coming here since 1995. And he's like, oh, I suppose I've never seen you in here.
Yeah.
I said, well, listen.
I'm selective about who else gets in here.
I said you're very rude. Yeah. And I really wish you wouldn't do that again.
Well, I hope that's not a recurrent theme with your visits to your old haunts, all right?
Well, I think I'm going to go back because it had, I mean, when I used to go there, it used to be a very sort of... I'm not going to say local, but it was people that just worked there. You know, but for this, it's obviously appeared on some bloody guide.
Yep.
Because it's now full of fucking tourists.
Indeed.
Which is not good.
Not good.
While we were in the air, Harry instructs me, and I've got a picture of you there, instructs me to concoct a tale, and this sounds just like you, right?
What?
About the Basque separatists.
This is libelous.
Right, vowing to spill British blood the length and breadth of the country, right? He says, don't worry, we've got an exclusive line, says Parry, right? The exclusive line, this is classic Mike Parry, right? The exclusive line, the bomber-in-chief is a stunningly attractive and seductively mysterious Spanish woman known locally as the Black Widow. Right? Now, it's obviously very clear... That this woman doesn't fucking exist, right?
Exactly.
Parry urges me not to make any calls yet, as it might knock the story down. Which is another classic manoeuvre of yours. I can't call anybody on this.
Call anybody. They might say it's not true.
They might say it's not true.
Yeah. Tell you what, they'd fucking try it out with me, right? And there would be consequences.
Really?
What sort of
consequences do you
mean? Well, the consequence would be, I'd say, why don't you fuck off, youngster, and go and get a life and make a life for yourself, and when you've achieved half of what I've achieved in life and had a few drinks along the way to try and ease the pressure, to try and ease the strain, to try and, you know, provide initiatives to give me the spark to get up every day, go out and conquer the world, like you will never fucking do.
By this time, you've already bored them to death.
Like you will never do because you ain't got it about you, and I have.
Yes.
Then you can come and tell me how to behave in a pub.
It turns out that the girl emerges from the bedroom, naked, starkers. I'm actually not surprised. This will get worse before it gets better.
Mm.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.